Call this meeting on House Military Veterans Affairs to order. It's 1 p.m. on Thursday, March 9th. We're in the Gruenberg Room in the State Capitol in Juneau. With me, I have Representative Rauscher, Representative Gray, and Representative Groh. Let the record reflect, and also Representative Sadler. Let the record reflect, we have a quorum. Please mute your cell phones. Silence them. Thank you. I'd like to thank Doug Bridges with the Juneau LIO for moderating today's meeting. I'd also like to thank Kevin Allen, the House Records, for documenting today's meeting. We have one item on the agenda today, House Bill 25, PFD eligibility, uniform services. That's HB 25 is sponsored by Representative Andy Story. Representative Story and her staffer, Seth Witten, are here to present the bill to the committee. Please note that we will take public testimony during today's hearing. Representative Story, Mr. Witten, please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair Wright. Representative Andy Story, proudly serving District 3.
And my name is Seth Witten, staff to Representative Andy Story.
Thank you, Chair Wright, and members of the committee for hearing this bill today. House Bill 25 came about as a result of a call from a constituent. They were a member of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, better known as NOAA, Commissioned Officer Corps, and were denied a PFD because they were posted at a duty station outside of Alaska for longer than the 180-day allowable absence established in statute. This seemed not right to me. They were serving our country, yet were denied a PFD. So we looked into it further. The NOAA Corp and the U.S. Public Health Services, United States USPHS Corps, are both branches of the Uniformed Services of the United States. They play critical roles and missions regarding from research to public health emergencies to humanitarian aid to disaster responses and relief. Also part of the Uniformed Services is the Armed Services, which is the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, Space Force, and Coast Guard. This bill changes statute by replacing the term Armed Forces with the term Uniformed Services. It also amends Statute 43.23.008F to provide a definition of Uniformed Services that is consistent with the definition used in federal code. This would close the gap in our statute, including the NOAA and United States Public Health Services Commissioned Officer Corps for an allowable absence for a PFD. Currently, there are 16 subsections of statute that have allowable absences, including the Peace Corps, secondary and post-secondary education, and the U.S. Olympic and national teams. So the first committee of hearing this bill was in State Affairs. And after being heard in the House State Affairs Committee, a committee substitute was drafted. Committee substitute House Bill 25, that includes also an allowable absences for Alaskans who want to pursue merchant marine apprenticeships training programs. These are individuals who are meant to be included in the statute when it was amended in 1999. In fact, they were frequently paid dividends up until 2017, as were members of the Commissioned Officer Corps of NOAA and the United States Public Health Services Commissioned Officer Corps. And I wanted to let the committee know that the governor recently introduced bills in the House and in the Senate, House Bill 87 and Senate Bill 85, that contains similar language creating allowable absences for the merchant marines in training. This committee substitute also corrects an oversight that excludes dependents of parents or guardians who missed the PFD filing deadline because they experienced a medical emergency, by extending a grace period for those dependents' applications to be filed, and the grace period would now go till October 1st. So the bill before you does not change other eligibility requirements for the PFD. It simply allows Alaskans serving their country in the NOAA and United States Public Health Services Commission Officer Corps, Merchant Marine apprenticeships, and those parents or guardians who are unable to file because of a medical emergency to remain eligible for the PFD, so they would be included in those other two of them in the other subsections. And just by changing the armed forces to uniform, it would close that gap for the commissioned officer corps. So today you're going to hear from our invited testifiers who have experience with the NOAA and the United States Public Health Services Commissioned Officer Corps, as well as the Merchant Marine Apprentice Program director, about how important the work that these Alaskans do for our state, and why I think you'll agree that they should be included in this allowable absence. Seth Witten, who works with me, is here to go through your packet, do the fiscal notes, and then we thought we could hear from the invited testifiers.
Yes, please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Seth Witten, Staff Director of Story. In your packet, you'll find both versions of the bill, both the original bill and the committee substitute. You'll find the sponsor statement, sectional analysis, summary of changes from version A of the bill to CS HB 25. You'll find two articles that help you understand what the NOAA Commission Officer Corps does. There's one brief article that explains what the United States Public Health Service Commission Officer Corps does. And then there are two articles on Merchant Marine apprenticeship programs. One of those is from the AK Journal Commerce, and then the other one is from the Seafarers International Union that talks about their efforts to recruit Alaskans to be deep sea merchant mariners. There is a fiscal note for the bill. It's a zero fiscal note. And the reason for that is because it will not change the amount that the state pays out. It will just take that dividend amount and divide it by the additional number of people who would be eligible. I want to stress that in trying to put a hard number on that, it's difficult because the Division of Revenue does not track dividends that are denied and why they denied them. So they're unable to tell us, no, we denied this many from Merchant Marine, this many from NOAA, this many from Public Health. What I can tell you is that with NOAA, there are six Commission Officer Corps members who have a residence of record in Alaska. And with the Public Health Service, there are 356. Now, some indeterminate number of those, it could be all of them, it could be most of them, it could be, you know, half of them. It's very difficult to tell how many of those are currently filing for dividends because they're not out of the state. So I don't mean to reference those 362 people as people who would be added. They may already be included, and it would be very difficult to say. So what I've done to try and get our heads around what that number is just look back at dividend amounts since 2018. And what I found in looking at that, I thought that it would be easy to say for every 100 people we added, how many dollars would that take out of my dividend or your dividend? And what I found is from 2018 to 2021, every 100 people that were added, which again is, it's not necessarily that these 362 people from the Commission Officers Corps would be added. There may be a portion of those who are already eligible. But for every 100 people added, it will amount to approximately $1 for dividend from 2018 to 2021. With the larger dividend last year, and that was a dividend amount of $3,288 or $84, I'm sorry, the difference would be $4 for every 100 people that were added. So, you know, just you can kind of think if you add 500 people, it might amount to $20 less in individual dividends. And that's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Rauscher.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it. Through the chair, this is a very nice bill. I appreciate it. I support the bill. One thing that concerns me is the fiscal note. I'm just trying to wrap my head around. One year, I had not filled out my PFD application correctly. Whoa, the scrutiny, the amount of time that they spent trying to correct me before I became a legislator, by the way, and try to figure out what went wrong, what I did wrong. So I just see some software involved because you're going to be filling out an application. You're going to declare something on an application as to why you've been out of town or out of state, I should say. So I'm just wondering why there's a zero fiscal note on something like that when there's going to be some sort of time involved trying to understand who is actually going to get one, who is not going to get one, who is supposed to be out of state, who's a military, who's not a military. I'm just trying to figure out. It seemed like there should have been some sort of a software fiscal note. It's just a question. I don't know if you even have an answer for that.
Yes, thank you, Chair Wright. And we do have the Department of Revenue online, so they will be able to tell you why they feel that. And I think if we changed it in statute, then they would know that they qualify, and so they would not be going through that that process, possibly. But I think it's important that we hear from them because that's a good question.
Yes, I believe we have Mr. Sean Ireland online. Sean, can you hear me? John, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you please speak with Genevieve, the director of the Permanent Fund Dividend Division? She should also be online.
Sure, of course.
Thank you.
Hello, Genevieve, are you on the line?
Hi, good afternoon, Chair and Committee. Can you hear me okay?
Please state your name for the record.
Of course. Genevieve Watusik. I am the director of the PFD division. And through the chair, Representative Rauscher, you had a question about the zero fiscal note. For the CF version of the bill, it's an indeterminate fiscal note. And that was submitted on February 25th, 23. Does the committee have that in front of them? And I just wanted to, I'll just keep mentioning on this one. There was a zero fiscal note originally, as the sponsor of the bill noted. It would be minimal cost to make those changes. We do request leave and earning statements from military members. We do require the paperwork of when they enter and exit the military. So they're required to provide all of that documentation to us. So that's why when the bill was originally submitted, it was a zero fiscal note because it would be minimal changes to the division. But we have an indeterminate note because of the changes made in the previous committee for this current version of the bill, the CS for House Bill 25, sir.
I'm going to take a brief at ease. Mr. Witten, would you like to comment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, if that's okay. Through the chair to Representative Rauscher, I certainly am not an expert in the software that the Department of Revenue has, but there are, 16 different allowable absences in statute that the Department of Revenue is dealing with every year that people claim. And I assume that it's a different number of Alaskans that claim absences under those every year. So I'm not sure how that ties to costs, how more absences directly relate to their costs, but just my understanding is that there is a system in place that they're using to deal with the allowable absences currently in statute.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Representative Gray.
Hi. Thank you so much for bringing this forward. I have a couple of questions, just because I'm not that familiar with the uniform services outside of millet, what I'm familiar with. I was gone for longer than the 180 days, and I did collect my PFD. I have friends who are in the public health service, and their deployment is like 3 years in my particular case, and they move to Alaska and they buy a home and they collect PFDs because they've been here for that long. So my question, I guess, is about if your home of record is Alaska, how long are your potential deployments to another part of the country? And I just want more education about what these typical out-of-state assignments are. Thank you.
Through the chair, thank you very much for that question, Representative Gray. And our testifiers who are online, they will go over that because they've experienced that and can probably say it much more clearly than I can.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, Representative Grohl?
Just a comment if I could, Mr. Chair. I also want to thank the sponsor and the staff for this bill. I have worked in this area before when I was in the Alaska Department of Revenue and also when I helped create the Permanent Fund Dividend. And I'm aware of the difficulties in working this out, and I appreciate your work in doing so. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
I do have a question, sir.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Story, I guess. Your aide, Seth, said that there were six NOAA commissioned officers, 356 commissioned public health service officers. And I assume, correct me if I'm wrong, that that's actually the commissioned officers themselves. We could assume a quotient of an additional two or three or four people for dependents and such. Is that correct?
Thank you for that. Through the chair, thank you for that question, Rep. Sadler. If I could go to Permanent Fund Dividend Lifeline, I would appreciate to hear it officially from them.
Yes, Ms. Watusik, are you online?
Chair, yes, I am. Genevieve here. Genevieve Watusik for the record. Representative, can you restate the question, please?
Certainly. Through the chair, Genevieve Watusik, we have heard citation that there's about six NOAA commissioned officers and about 356 commissioned public health service officers. I'm just wondering if that number includes the actual officers themselves and or their dependents, and whether we could assume that another two, three, or four dependents per commission person might be covered by this provision.
Thank you for restating that. Through the chair, Representative Sadler, we don't actually have those numbers. The numbers that were just provided, I think, were from the representative's office. I'm guessing they worked with public health on those, so we're not actually sure on that. Thank you.
Follow up.
And through the chair, I represent the story. I'm looking real hard at the guts of the bill and did not see it, but the title does speak of certain members of uniformed services, spouses and dependents. Can you just point to me where in the bill it addresses the question of dependents and spouses of members of uniformed services, please? Oh, looks like it's on page 3, line 28. Reach to it. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, through the chair. Very good question. So we do have our invited testifiers on the line, whenever you would like to go to them.
Of course. We'll move on to invited testimony. Mr. David Wilkinson, are you on the line?
This is David Wilkinson. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Will you please state your name for the record?
Yes, I'm David Matthew Wilkinson.
Would you begin your testimony?
Okay, I'll begin. Thank you for the House Military and Veterans Affairs Committee and Chair for this hearing and for inviting me to be a presenter. I am a lieutenant or an O3 in the U.S. Public Health Service since 2016. I strongly support this bill. I've been an Alaska resident since 1997. I took a three-year break in service when I was in the active duty Air Force. And then I returned to Alaska. I'm no longer a Alaska resident. I received two PFDs in 2016 and 2017 with a military exemption that they thought a public health service was part of the uniform or the part of the active armed services. And then in 2018, they realized that it was not part of the armed services, so they denied my PFD check. In 2018, even when I met all the other qualifications, but I'm no longer an Alaska resident. I have nothing to gain now from this bill change, but I support the bill because it can help other future public health service, NOAA and Merchant Marines to keep their Alaska residency and, of course, keep getting a permanent fund dividend, even though we're away and deployed or stationed outside of Alaska. The public health service originated with a system of marine hospitals in 1798 for the sick and injured sailors and it was consolidated into the Marine Hospital Service in 1871 with the position of Surgeon General that same year. Today, the Surgeon General of the U.S. is Vice Admiral Vivek Murthy. Accepted a PhD, a public health service officer position in Florida after I tried for several months to find a position in Alaska, closer to Alaska or in Alaska. PHS officers in Alaska work for the Indian Health Service or the Coast Guard. I deployed multiple times with public health service, COVID-19 missions, unaccompanied minor missions, and also unaccompanied minor missions at the U.S.-Mexico border for support for the minors. And also I responded to hurricane responses. In 1889, the Marine Hospital Service was changed to Public Health Service because the scope expanded from just helping sick and injured sailors, expanded quite a bit. The PHS now includes in addition to medical doctors, it also includes veterinarians, dentists, therapists, engineers, pharmacists, nurses, environmental health specialists, scientists, dietitians, and other health professionals. And that concludes my testimony. And thank you, committee and the chair for hearing my testimony. And I can answer questions. One of the questions that was asked by a previous representative was how long we can be gone. And deployments can usually are about a month for public health service, but our time stationed in another state can vary from a few years to up to our entire career. To answer that question, I can take any questions that anybody has from you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilkinson. I believe we do have a question. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Wilkinson, thank you for your service in the Air Force and the Public Health Service. You're a good person to ask this. You just said that some public health workers may be absent from Alaska their entire career. There is a provision in state law currently that says that if you're active duty military and you are outside of the state longer than 10 years, that there are some additional requirements to establish a cathaxis or a connection to the state. Given what you said, would you, in your opinion, I'm asking your opinion, think that that 10-year provision would apply to members of the Public Health Service? In other words, if this bill were to pass, how would you feel about having a provision that if you're gone for 10 years, you have to kind of prove up a little more relationship with the state of Alaska?
I'm not familiar with that part of the law. When I was in the Air Force, I was only gone for 3 years. I received my PFD checks for the entire 3 years, and I kept my residency. I'm not sure how many officers that would affect. I don't know the answer to your question. I guess you asked my opinion about it. Of course, I'd be nice if it was extended for our entire career. But but the bill as it is now is still a lot better than before, because it at least allows PHS officers, no enlisted Marines, to keep their residency for at least 10 years, which is a lot better than not.
And a follow-up briefly, when someone deploys or is assigned outside of Alaska for public health service duty, does your service require you to change your home of record?
No. In fact, your home of record stays – my home of record is still Juneau, Alaska, even now.
Thank you, sir.
When I retire or get out of the service, they have to pay me and move back to Juneau.
By which,
so that doesn't change.
By which you mean you will enjoy the benefits that allow moving back to your home of record. You didn't mean you'll have to pay me to get back to Alaska, did you?
No, I have to pay to go back. They'll pay me to move all my household goods and myself. They'll move everything back.
A little lighter, but yes, sir.
Upon retirement.
Representative
Gray. I get another 10 years before I can retire, but yeah, in 10 years or whenever I retire, then I'll get to do that.
Thank you, Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair. It's my experience that we have a lot of public health service positions available in Alaska. And so I'm a little bit curious how likely it is that you would be assigned without any input from yourself to serve your entire career in another state and not have the opportunity to take an open position in Alaska.
Right now I'm working for, PHS employees are assigned to various agencies. I mentioned the two most popular ones in Alaska are Public Health Service and Coast Guard. I'm in the engineer category, and the Coast Guard does not hire engineers. Indian Health Service does. Right now, the agency I'm with is the Food and Drug Administration, and right now they don't have a permanent office in Alaska for FDA. So once I were to switch back to IHS, there's no positions that would be available to me at this time, unless they were to allow me to. I am looking to see if they open an FDA office there. That'd be really ideal for me. Ideally, I'd like to go back sooner before I retire, but did I answer your question?
Follow up?
Yes, that answered my question. I guess I'm just curious if you would be okay or supportive of an amendment that would allow for PFDs for these sorts of these folks when there is no position in the department that they want to work in or work in available in Alaska. But it seems to me if there was a position in that department with Public Health Service available in Alaska, that if you wanted your PFD, you should be working in that job in the state of Alaska.
But that's not up to the employee. It's not up to the officers to determine where you work. Number one, there has to be a job opening, and even if there is a job opening, they got to accept you into it. At the time, there wasn't an opening when I was there. I couldn't even apply, but there has been opening since. But it's not always up to the officers to decide that. So that's something we don't have control over necessarily.
Okay, so that's important. Through the chair, so you do not have any choice in which state in which you work. You are not able to apply for certain openings in certain states. It's really all of that is completely outside of the employee's control.
It's not 100% outside of it, but you have some control over it. But I guess it's largely outside of it, but it's partially inside of it too. I would not recommend that such an amendment, but not to me. But in general, the officers, you got to have an opening to even apply. And if you do apply, they're gonna send you. Now, in the Air Force, it's the same way. In the Air Force, you submitted, they call it a dream sheet, was the name of it. But you'd say, here's where I'd like to go. But at the end of the day, they said, you're going to go here and you just salute and you follow your orders and you go. I mean, PHS is not that different. They don't call it a dream sheet. You can actually apply for jobs or openings, but you still got to go where the work is and where they need you. That still takes precedent over the officer's preferences. But you do have some control over where you go.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for Mr. Wilkinson? Thank you, Mr. Wilkinson, for your time. I believe we have Sarah Tanja online. Sarah, can you hear me? Sarah, can you hear me?
Hi. Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes. Will you please state your name and your affiliation for the record?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Sarah Tanja. I'm a separated Noah Corps officer.
And will you please begin your testimony?
Of course. Thanks for the opportunity to come talk today virtually. I'm calling in from Seattle, Washington, where, like I mentioned earlier, I'm no longer in the NOAA Corps. I served in the NOAA Corps from 2016 to 2021, and I'm currently in Seattle at University of Washington getting a graduate degree in fisheries. NOAA Corps was kind of ties its roots to the Coast and Geodetic Survey. So I don't know if anyone has had a chance to kind of look up, you know, NOAA Corps' landing page on the Office of Marine and Aviation site, but it kind of provides some history about the NOAA Corps. It started back in like 1807 with President Thomas Jefferson. formed this survey to go out and survey the United States coasts. And it got kind of wrapped into this kind of like scientific historic survey group of vessel operators and scientists that would go out and do a lot of mapping and coastal ecology. And in 1917, during World War I, is when that group actually got transitioned into being commissioned officers, because they went over and did some advanced mapping before the U.S. Navy kind of landed in certain areas that were of interest during World War I. But the five and a half, six years that I served in the NOAA Corps, the first two I received in Alaska PSD. I grew up in Juneau, and I'm actually the person that called Representative Story, who is was at the time my representative for the Alaska legislature, and indicated that, you know, I had applied for the PSD and was denied based on this technicality, in a way that the language of the PFD uses armed forces rather than uniformed services. And I, you know, had my PFD denied. I appealed it, and the kind of the appeal process ended with this, you know, sentiment from the PFD appeals officer that he wished he could give me the PFD, but based on the language used, that he could not. And he actually is the one that suggested that I call my representative to talk about whether or not we could get the language in the PFD statute changed. A few things I want to clarify is that I maintained my residency as an Alaskan throughout the time I was serving in the NOAA Corps, but without receiving a PFD. Whether or not you get a PFD doesn't mean that you're not an Alaskan resident. So I was continuously, you know, visiting my family, parents who still live in Juneau during that whole service time. I was still voting in all of the local and state elections. And I maintained my, you know, driver's license. The PFD was one aspect that was in a way separate from my residency, legal claims to residency as an Alaskan. And I guess similar to Mr. Wilkinson, you know, since I'm no longer an Alaskan resident, I'm no longer a service member in the NOAA Corps, I personally don't have anything to gain from this testimony. I just think that it's would be equitable to change the language to include uniformed service members, especially seeing that other forms of service are recognized by the statute. The Peace Corps, serve overseas, and their service is good for, you know, global endeavors. NOAA Corps serves domestically on all U.S. coasts, and I would say probably serves Alaska most out of all the states, since Alaska has more coast than anywhere else in the United States, and the missions involve fisheries survey and providing information for fisheries management councils to manage healthy fish stocks, and also charts and updating bathymetry for navigation, which is hugely important to Alaska. So I will end my testimony there and take any questions that anyone may have.
Thank you, Ms. Tanja. Are there any questions? Seeing none, thank you for your time, Ms. Tanja. Up next, we do have Rich Berkowitz. Mr. Berkowitz, could you please state your name and affiliation for the record?
Yes, thank you, Chairman Wright and members of the committee. My name is Rich Berkowitz. I'm of counsel for the Transportation Institute, and I'd like to speak in favor of the bill, in particular, the section related to merchant mariners in training. The reason why it is important that we have this legislation passed is that back in 1999, we were, when merchant mariners were not recognized under the PFD, we were able to pass a legislation that would include merchant mariners who are working outside of the state, including on many of the vessels serving the state, to get their PFD, provided they met all the other obligations and strictures of the PFD law. Their families were not included. It was just simply those Alaskans working outside on deep sea vessels. At the time, there was exemption, allowable absence exemption for vocational training. So there was no need to spend any time on that element of the law because vocational training, broadly speaking, was already available as an allowable absence. The mariners that I work with are members of the Seafarers International Union. My organization, the Transportation Institute, represents many of the employers that have contracts with the union. These include Matson, Alaska Tanker Company, OSG, Tote, and Crowley, among others. At the time, they were very much interested in seeing more local hire. In fact, Congressman Young was on a vessel for Tote Maritime, asked where all the Alaskans were on board after getting a very nice tour, and there were none. And I got a call soon thereafter from the CEO of Tote telling me in no uncertain terms that that was never going to be to happen again. And that's really what helped to motivate the union to establish a union hall in Anchorage and to recruit in Alaska. So that was in about 1997. In 1999, after hearing about Alaskan youngsters in particular who were not, who were told, well, yeah, you can ship out, but you won't be able to get your PFD, it was very clear that they had a somewhat disinterest since that's really all the money that they knew growing up in Alaska in many instances. So it was clear we had to change the exemptions for merchant mariners. Things went fine. The legislature nearly unanimously passed legislation. We literally received and trained hundreds of Alaskans over the years, and we'll be hearing more about that from another speaker. Things went well until 2017 when the Alaska Permanent Fund Division decided that they were going to change the definition of allowable vocational training. And they used another agency, the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, and used their definition of vocational training, which said that it had to be recognized by Title IV of the federal code, which essentially said they had to be eligible for tuition loans and support under the Department of Education loan statutes and grant statutes. Well, that made, kind of made sense that to do that, except if you don't charge tuition. The school that I'm referring to, all the tuition is paid for along with the room and board by the vessel operators that have contracts with the union. So there is no tuition. So it was really through unanticipated consequences that all of a sudden these young soon-to-be mariners were left high and dry without being eligible for their PFD because they went to an institution that didn't wasn't recognized by the state because it didn't charge tuition. So we have worked with the PFD. There was an interest in changing the regulations so that it would allow for that. Long and short of it is the recommendation from the Department of Law was to that we need to change the actual statute, which we hope to do with this bill. We are greatly interested in continuing our relationship with the state and continuing to provide this free education and the guaranteed job placement in some wonderful jobs. The young people that we get out of Alaska end up being some of the best people that we can find. Maybe it's because you have the largest coastline in the country, but the maturity, the responsibility, the problem solving that we get in a dynamic environment from your youth is really that's among the best that we have in the entire country. The union recruits throughout the country for this school that's located in Maryland. So with your help, we hope that you will be able to essentially bring us back to where we were just 5-6 years ago, where we were able to accommodate local hire, which I know is something that is on the mind of most Alaskans, and assure that the people that we have shipping out can earn a very good wage with union benefits and return that money back into the state. After all, when you're on a ship, there's really not much you can spend your money on. Everything is provided. So to be in a small village in Alaska with a mariner's wage, you come off that ship, you're going to be spending a lot of that money back in your village, back in your town, or back in your city. We'd like to see that continue. We'd like to see our ability to obtain and recruit Alaskans for these jobs continue into the future. So thank you, Chairman Wright and committee. I would welcome through the chair any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Berkowitz. I believe we have a question from Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Berkowitz, forgive me if I missed it. Please describe very briefly for me what is the Transportation Institute, whose auspices are you organized under? Just tell me a very little bit about it, please.
Certainly. Well, first of all, we are a member of the Alaska State Chamber, where I've had the pleasure of hearing you speak a couple of times. We work on behalf of U.S. Flag Maritime. We promote policies that will support the U.S. Flag Merchant Marine. This includes various, mostly federal legislation, whether it be the Maritime Security Program or cargo preference laws or the Jones Act, that helps to promote and maintain a U.S. flag merchant marine, including, as I mentioned, some of the vessels that serve Alaska, where we would welcome seeing more local hire and more Alaskans on.
May I follow up?
Follow
through the chair, Mr. Berkowitz. No, briefly, who are your members? Are you a nonprofit? Are you a for-profit business corporation?
We are non, yes. We are a...
go ahead, sir.
503C6, I believe. Our main office is in Maryland, and we have a West Coast office, which for many years I headed up. I am now retired and of counsel. But given that I was back, I worked in my former position back in in the late 90s when this law passed, and was really instrumental in helping me pass it, the original exemption for allowable absences for mariners. This is one of the items that I wanted to continue to work on in my current position as of counsel in the consulting role for the Transportation Institute. I have nothing to gain personally from this law being passed. I only wish to see more Alaskans on U.S. flag vessels. As mentioned, because they are some of the best quality candidates that we can find. And I'd be happy to share more with you on that if you care.
No, I don't believe that's necessary. Mr. Berkowitz, thank you for your time. Now I would like to open it up for public testimony. Is there anyone in the room who would like to publicly testify? Seeing none, we're moving on to the testimonies online. I believe we have a Nicholas Maroney. Mr. Maroney, are you available for public testimony?
Yes, this is Nicholas Maroney. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Maroney. Please state your name and affiliation, and you have 2 minutes.
Very well, sir. Again, my name is Nicholas Maroney, and I'm with the Seafarers International Union, and I want to thank the members of this special committee for the opportunity to address the issue of individuals attending certain merchant marine vocational programs to remain eligible for the PFD during absence from the state as found in HB 25. The Seafarers International Union has maintained a union office in Anchorage since 1996 for the express purpose of recruiting and servicing Alaskans for employment on board U.S. flag vessels in the domestic and international trades. Our union also represents civilian mariners who are employed by the United States Navy's Military Sealift Command and the Maritime Administration's Ready Reserve vessels that are called upon to meet our nation's needs during a conflict or a national emergency. For over 25 years, we have made a determined effort to recruit Alaskan youth, natives, displaced fishers, displaced workers, and veterans for employment as deep sea mariners. We first started a direct strategic partnership with the Department of Labor and the Workforce Development in 1997, which has blossomed into the referral, training, and hire of over 800 Alaskans over these years. All of our training is conducted at a maritime school on the shores of Southern Maryland, and that is operated by a joint labor management board. It provides the most diverse set of U.S. Coast Guard certified maritime classes in the nation, and it also maintains a United States Department of Labor registered apprentice program and has been held in the highest esteem for over 50 years. All those who graduate are guaranteed employment, earn excellent union wages and family benefits, and qualify for union pension plans. They can advance through the United States Coast Guard defined career ladder all the way to becoming an officer through our school. All the education-related expenses, once they are accepted into the program and progress through the career ladder, are paid for by the Union Management Training Trust. Our efforts were particularly appreciated
by Mr.
Knowles and the congressional delegation.
If you can please wrap up in the next 15 seconds.
Yes. We have tremendous success with our collaborated effort to train and hire Alaskans. Frankly, Alaskans and veterans are clear standouts in our recruiting and retention goals. We respectfully urge you to pass HB 25 so that we can maintain our ability to attract Alaskans to the opportunities and the quality employment U.S. flag maritime has to offer. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. We do also have one more public testifier, Mr. Ralph Mirsky. Ralph, are you online?
Yes, this is Ralph Mirsky speaking.
Will you please state your name and affiliation for the record and continue with your testimony? You have
two
minutes.
Name is Ralph Mirsky, and I have a business, SeaLink Incorporated. Been in business for over 22 years in the state of Alaska, working through the Department of first 21 years to apply for and accept federal grants to recruit for the Seafarers Vocational Training Program. My agency was responsible for recruiting over 600 hard-to-serve youth, dislocated workers, displaced fishermen, low-income adults, you name it. We've had just an unbelievable success rate. Dynamite recruits. And it's just been a boom for people all throughout Alaska. We recruited all, my agency. We're a nonprofit agency. And about 1917, the permanent fund dividend went away. And what we found is that folks are turning these opportunities down. It's a phenomenal opportunity. It has helped so many people that don't believe it. success stories from kids out of the village. One kid, for example, out of Ketchikan, native young man, he worked his way up. No college education, worked his way up. He's now a captain on the ferries, one of the ferries in Puget Sound, state of Washington. It's an unbelievable opportunity, and I want to thank you guys for SB 25. I hate to see kids walk away because they're not going to get their permanent fund dividend. They got a fabulous permanent fund dividend this last time, and they see it as a big-time benefit. The job is the benefit. The career is the benefit. I just hope you guys, I hope they can return that benefit to these kids.
Thank you, Mr. Mirsky.
Yeah, the other thing I want to say is that they are gone for, oftentimes
Mr. Mirsky,
over 100
if you could wrap days. It up in the next 15 seconds.
Yeah, I'll wrap it up. We have a scholarship program that sends kids to the California Maritime Academy. A lot of those kids are out of the state of Alaska for over 180 days. It's a four-year, university, but because of their required summer cruise, they're out most of the year. They get their permanent fund dividend. There's some unfairness involved here. So, yeah, I'm done. Thank you very, very much. And again, thank you for doing this.
Thank you, Mr. Mirsky. I'll now close public testimony. HB 25 will be held over until a future meeting. That concludes the agenda for today. Our next meeting will be 1 p.m. on Tuesday, March 14th. If there are no other business, we will close House Special Committee, Military Veterans Affairs. Thank you.